Previously. X-rated, the X-Men Animated Review Show.
Pay attention, because it's time for X-Rated, the X-Men Animated Review Show.
I didn't hear that. Did you play noise?
Oh, no. Did you guys not hear my sound effect?
Nothing played. It was just an awkward silence where we stared at you.
Oh, boo. Well, let's try that again. Boo. The one time I didn't test it ahead of time. You see, that's why I do that Beatles snuff clip every time.
It's good. It's good to do.
What about this?
You dare interrupt my glorious moment? God.
All right. Well, I interrupted my own glorious moment.
It's a good moment to be glorious.
How about this?
Now pay attention. Yep. It is time for today's lesson.
That's what it said, and that's why I said what I said earlier. But anyway, thanks for joining us here at X-Rated, the X-Men Animated Review Show, where I mess up the intros every now and then.
To the might and glory of the Imperium.
Or as we call it around here sometimes, the Imperium.
I like that.
The X-Imperium. Yeah, it works. I am your host.
For me to be more, you must be less.
It's probably true. And with me, of course, is my co-host.
Fear poached in self-loathing, pancaked by the pressure of existing.
That is incredibly accurate.
Right? I had a different clip for you, but then I heard that and I was just like, oh, well, that's Andre. But I am Dav Bird. He is Ronandre the Accuser. And we have a guest with us here tonight as well.
Heavens, no!
Yes, we do. And we're happy to have him.
Heavens, no!
We have the Jabversary with us, Ryan Jablonski. How's it going, Ryan?
What's going on, guys? How are you? Thanks for having me back.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, the Jabster.
Ultimate Jabster. Jabber Ryan.
Heavens, no!
Oh no, is it going to be another one of those glitch ones and it's going to be Heavens No over and over again? Wouldn't that be something, Andre?
That might be worth it, actually.
I mean, if anything, it'd be a fun callback to the early days of the show.
It would be, wouldn't it? It'd be like getting into a warm bath.
Let's catch up on old times.
What do I have to do?
What you think they're doing up there?
What you think they're doing up there? Actually, before we do that, I should say, we're here to review, eventually, X-Men 97, Season 1, Episode 6, Life, Death, Part 2. So thanks for joining us to review this. What I will say right away is a very fine episode of X-Men and television. C-Jack thought he had a delay on the screen because I was just staring at the screen with no sound effects. But... you know, fair enough. But here we are into our segment. What you think they doing up there? So, Ryan, what you think they doing up there as far as X-Men 97 goes? You enjoying it so far?
Oh, my God. It's been five. Well, we'll get into this one, but we'll say the last 5 weeks of just anything I possibly could have imagined, plus just better. I mean, we had week five ripped my heart out. I mean... Week four, which, you know, it's, you'd think that would have been the weakest link, and I laughed for half of it, then I was freaking out the other half. I mean, it's I don't want to say perfect because it's really rough, but I really can't imagine it being any better.
Yeah. I'll say it's perfect.
It's fantastic, I must say. You know, and even like I said, even the shows that I don't love as much as others usually get an eight, which is still really good. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert: this one's probably an eight. But
it's tough to please, sir.
It's a fucking eight, Devin. It's 80. It's 80 out of 100. That's incredibly good. You just love it because it's Storm, and half of this episode is Storm.
This is This is the episode that builds you back up after the last one tears your heart out. I mean, well, this one sort of does a little bit, but
it's the
it builds you back up by the end.
It's funny because you can almost write the formula. Like every show does this. They do the big crazy episode where everything goes wild and a bunch of people die, and then the next episode follows some other character that's not related to that to give you like a breather in between the catch up. They do that so often, and it's good. It's needed, and they already established this side story anyway. But it's weird having like two half episodes. You know,
yeah, I mean, it seems to be a new like format they're doing. It's more like you could see it, say it's like a storyline, B storyline, like a Star Trek episode too.
Kind of. Yeah, I guess so. But it's like a sequel to another half episode with a new half episode. But I guess it's like the Nintendo episode of the same thing.
Yeah.
But do you think that's they're trying to keep the because it's only 10 episodes, do you think they're trying to keep it from being too like character specific for a full episode, and maybe that's why they're doing the halves?
Well, I read somewhere I read somewhere that Bo DiMaggio told Disney that this is an X-Men show, not a Wolverine show.
Yeah, I heard that too.
So, yes. You know, and I still do think we need a Wolverine episode this season.
Oh, we'll get it. Yet. Like, they're saving it. He's going to do something so crazy in that three-parter.
I don't know, man. Like, yeah, well, that's not a Wolverine-specific episode. If it's like a three, well, maybe.
One of them can be.
I know. We always get one that ties into his backstory, you know, something related to that.
I don't want that this season.
Yeah, it'll probably be next season.
Those are always too much of an aside.
Yeah, they showed the shield in that mid-season trailer.
They did, but
now people are showing that the next episode the boot shows like a yellow boot looking at it, which looks like Rogue's boot. So it might be the next
more like episode. Rogue's boot,
and it might not be Wolverine. Yeah. It might be Cat. Maybe it's the Avengers reining her in when she's going nuts trying to find out what happened. So,
Cat better bring more than himself. That's all I'm saying.
Maybe Miss Marvel's out of her coma. Captain That'd be Marvel. Interesting. So
yeah, we don't see her out of her coma in that last series.
Nope, we don't. Only it was just astral projection.
She's like smiles, right?
Yeah, when she says goodbye at the end.
Oh yeah, that's right. So she's totally out of the coma by now. Yeah.
Oh, maybe. Who knows?
She's Captain Marvel. How long can you keep Captain Marvel in a coma? Not long, is my
guess. The 90s, at least.
I like the idea that when she came out of her coma and fully became powerful again, Rogue would lose those parts of her powers. Like it wears off and goes back to her. But, I mean, that's not what they're going to do.
No. They're not going to strip Rogue of her powers.
Well, she still have her powers. She just won't be able to fly and be super strong anymore.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, those are the good powers.
So the good powers are the ones she almost killed someone else to acquire, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, they better. You don't want to almost kill somebody for shitty powers.
I expect nothing more from the guy that sided with Team Iron Man in the Civil War.
I totally did not. But you just called Spider-Man a fascist earlier today. So would you to the X-Men?
Like most Hitler youth that were wrapped up in being part of the Nazis, they got indoctrinated at a young age before they had the information or the wherewithal of adult reasoning to change, to look at what they're doing and actually think about it. When you're a kid, if adult told you had to do this, you go do it. So, you know, it's not his fault. He was indoctrinated at a young age.
That's a pretty good comeback.
Thanks, I pulled out of my ass real fast. So,
yeah. Well, good job. Thanks. Good job at that.
Pretty fast for my feet sometimes.
Well, you know what? Because we were talking about it, let's talk about it.
Previously on X-Men.
Okay.
The name's Gambit.
Get your Kleenexes ready.
Remember it.
Okay. Oh, that's it? Okay.
No, I got one more, I think. Oh, wait a minute.
Let them thunder, for I am lightning.
Hey, Allison.
Hey, Allison.
Hey, Diamond, how are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it is my pleasure.
Oh, it's so good to see you again. How have you been?
I've been pretty good. I have been pretty good. How about you?
No, I can't complain. Just enjoying your work on the new show.
Okay, that girl is, she's a little dramatic, isn't she? She does love her theater.
Oh, she so does in all the best ways. And this is a great Storm episode. I'm so excited to watch it. and definitely want to talk to you about it. So, but to start off, what's it like? There's like, you're on the biggest show in the world right now. I would argue. Like,
well, it's pretty cool. I mean, it's a completely different experience than it was in the 90s. I mean, you know, who knew at that point what we were sitting on? And the big difference, of course, is the social media, right? And the fact that, you know, reaction is instantaneous. And yeah, you do feel as though you're living inside this bubble of X-Men. And that wasn't the case in the 90s at all. It took us, you know, quite a few years to sort of even begin to feel the impact of this, to even have start feeling around the edges of what it was that we were in, especially those of us like me who weren't raised with the comics, right? And who just didn't understand. And now, you know, to be able to tap so directly into fandom, a phenomenon that I did not know existed in the 1990s. So it's been a pretty mind expanding trip. It's been pretty cool.
I mean, Disney announced that there were 4 million views in the first 5 days of the first episode of the show. So that's insane. It's huge.
Yeah,
it is. It's pretty cool. And it's, you know, numbers are good. Numbers are great. But it's also, I guess, for me, the impact, you know, the positivity around the show, the way that fans are reacting to it, and the way that, you know, the care that has been taken with the stories that mean so much to people, the respect for the source that I, you know, everybody is talking about. And I think that's also something that, you know, was nothing to do with me, but when I hear the fans' response to this, I feel proud to be something that fans feel this positive about.
Oh yeah. Well, I've said before in this, like when we talked about the show, I said the show, you know, they talk about being anime shows that are designed for children. I said, the show isn't designed for kids. I mean, hopefully they'll watch it and enjoy it, but it's designed for us, people that grew up watching the show. And the way the show has gone, and I know, like, we talked about in the last episode, which was the big episode, you know, the big tear-jerking episode, that it was sort of like the Mayo said he wanted the journey of the X-Men to mirror the journey we had growing up with it. And that episode is like our 9/11. Which it felt like watching it, and
really
the idea of like going through, like the characters going through the journey we did, becoming adults in their own way within the show.
Yes,
it's so amazing, and it must have been a joy. How often, like, I don't know if this insider taught me if it is, but like, how much did you guys get all the scripts beforehand to read before you got to do them, or do you just get them as you do them, or? Like, did you know the
whole story? We get them as we do them.
Okay.
We get them as we do them. So okay. I was saying this the other day, that it's, you know, when that script comes and you know, you're called into the studio to do episode whatever, mm-hmm. you know, first of all, it's like, yay, I'm in episode whatever.
Yeah.
And then the next thing is, give me my script. I want to know what's happening in episode whatever, you know.
Yeah.
What's going on, what's gonna happen. And so it's really cool, and it's been an interesting way to sort of to put together a character, you know.
Well, you get a lot to chew on with
I'm
this.
loving it, and I think I'm having slightly different relationship with Storm. My relationship with Storm has definitely grown, I think, over the years. I've gotten to know her better. And I don't know. I'm not quite sure how to put it into words, but she does feel, it almost feels like the first time around I was grabbing hold of her as Storm, the superhero, you know, Storm, the weather witch, Storm. And now this time it's, There's just more an understanding of her as a woman, you know, and how she's navigating things, and yeah, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool being able to bring that together, and the writing on this show, of course, makes it easy.
I was going to say, it seems to have elevated, like, even in the previous seasons when she was, like, with Archon or whatever. Like, it never felt like a real adult. You're watching an adult relationship unfold. And, like, the show really feels like it's elevated her story and also her relationships into a realm that's beyond just fair for kids, into stuff that adults can pick at and enjoy and chew on.
Yes.
And it feels like it's elevated all that, too, which is – and I love seeing cheeky, like, innuendo and stuff that they can go a little further with. In this show than they could in the past. And I like the relationship with Forge as well. That must have been fun to explore.
Yeah, no, we haven't been letting my 7-year-old grandson really wants to watch this so bad.
Oh, really?
Well, let me tell you, if he'd seen The Adversary, he would not have been sleeping for. So that wouldn't work very well.
No.
So that's you, right? You're the adversary.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. That's amazing.
I told you. I said after the last episode. I said it had. You could tell. You could hear it in there.
Yes. It's like modulated, hear it.
But yeah.
But it's so terrifying.
You can hear it.
Your delivery on the adversary is.
Oh.
It's so unique.
It was fun.
Yeah, maybe don't do the voice for the grandchild, but
they have to be really bad. Like the adversary's coming out if you don't go to bed. Like, no.
Yes, but, can you imagine? No, and he would have loved it, and it would have been just chaos at bedtime for the next however long. So if
you just got the scripts as they were coming, that must have been a long wait for the next couple scripts after they like take Storm's powers away and then send her away.
Yes.
It's like, what? Am I getting more scripts? Like,
that's it, exactly. Exactly. Calling the agent going, any word on that I'm in next?
That didn't seem right, those last couple of scripts.
It's going to suck for, like, you know, a character, like the guy that's a voice for Gambit, to get the script and be like, well, I guess this is it. You know, like, it's got to be bittersweet. You get a great send-off, but, you know, it's a... And whether he comes back, who knows? But the idea of that is... It's got to be stressful because you never really know until you read that script whether your character continues on or not. So,
right. Yes.
And what a powerful comeback too in that episode.
Oh, great episode!
And like everyone was just sending me messages like she's back, and everyone's like Facebook posts were just like she's back.
Right. Yeah. It was a pretty cool sequence because of course you know we don't. A lot of the times we don't see the sequences, so we have no idea what it's going to. And so again, you're sort of sitting there going, "Hey, loving the music. Look at her go!" You know,
this episode is very much a love letter to the character. Especially, I'm so happy that they. I mean, we're going to talk about it later, but the costume that they went back to that classic costume.
That's my second favorite Storm costume.
Yeah, I really like that one a lot. So we've got a lot of versions of Storm in this season already, like with the Mohawk, the classic white costume before that with the Mohawk, and then this version, and then so it's cool. It's very cool. It's a great design. Yeah.
So Allison, I know you have a little story about recording the trailer. Yeah. You shared a bit with me earlier, but I think it's a cute story, so I don't know if you want to tell it.
Okay, well, we were, I tried to go down to Barbados. I tried to go home over the winter, if I can. So this winter, I was in Barbados, and my daughters came down, and we had a little bit of a family reunion, but my second-born daughter came down first, and we were at this Airbnb, and I tell her, listen, I've just gotten this message from Disney, and I've got to record this line, and they're going to be using it for something. I don't even know what they're going to be using for it, but I have to record this line, and she went, well, I don't know how you're going to record the line, Mom, because Sakari's asleep. And she's taking a nap, and I'm like, so she shoved me in a little room, and we closed the door tight, and I'm sitting in there trying to deliver this line, and I want to do it a la Storm. Storm's got to be there, but I can't wake up my granddaughter, who's not quite 2 yet and is a little bit cranky when she misses her afternoon naps. So it was just when the trailer landed and I saw it and went, wait a minute, that's the line. That's the line I was trying not to say too loud so that I wouldn't wake my granddaughter up.
And well, obviously it worked.
Okay. You managed it. I mean, the sound quality was really good in that tiny little closet that they put you in there.
That's got to be kind of stressful, too, though. Like, you can't always get to a sound booth, right? If they're like, we need this now, or if they're made the air thing, and you got to, like, find somewhere to get it recorded well enough for them to be able to do what they do with it.
Yes. Well, that one, I mean, usually, you know, I'm in the studio, so that's what was so weird. It's just like, I've gotten this call, and I've got to record this thing, and I'm not in the studio, and my granddaughter is sleeping and I'm in Barbados and the, you know, the roosters are going and so it was good, but you know, technology is great and they made it sound just right.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
We don't want to, of course, take up all your time tonight. But do you have any conventions or anything coming up you would like to,
Yes. Well, you know, that's why, yes, I am going to get off in a while because I leave tomorrow for Calgary. I've got a few conventions.
Awesome. That's fantastic.
So we're going to be in Calgary. I'm going to be appearing over the 4 days of that show. So that's 25th, 26th, 27th and 28th. At the Stampede Park Calgary Expo. I'm going to be out there with George Buza, who's the voice of Beast, and Matthew Watterson, Magneto.
And
Chris Potter is going to be there, the original Gambit, and now he's the voice of Cable.
Cable, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm really looking forward to meeting the fans. I was in Barbados when they did the Toronto convention. So this is my first time
in
Canada, sort of, you know, repping the Canadian end of things. So it'll be,
that's awesome.
I'm looking forward to meeting the fans.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah,
all you guys got to know for Nickel City in Buffalo in June. I can't wait. It's it's my small little local con, and they announce all you guys. I'm like, oh, man.
Yes.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah.
Well, going for the group photo, Ryan? The group photo. There it is. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, you know, Allison,
really
before
good
you.
Talking to you guys. Thank you so much for reaching out.
Before you go there, I did, if you were interested, I wanted to read you a few of these comments we've been getting on our last interview because people have some nice things to say about you. Will say.
You got to flatter. I got to keep your.
Yeah, if you don't mind a little butter on your toast, I have some. Well, one guy, it must be a Nova Scotian himself, because he's like, Storm married a down homeboy. Ain't that something?
I like in the accent, too. You have to do the.
Well, I threw my Nova Scotian ain't that something on.
I met him at Mount Allison University in Saskatchewan, New Brunswick, and he lived in Pictou, Nova Scotia.
That is very close to where I grew up. I grew up in Antigonish, Nova Scotia, so around the corner.
We have another good one. So awesome to see your back is Storm. We have, this interview is amazing. And that was C-Jack, and laughed about your comment about how no one had seen a black person before in Sackville, New Brunswick. That was funny.
Probably not wrong.
No, it's probably not wrong. Allison is my favorite person at this moment, is another comment.
that's cool.
My childhood Storm, my favorite queen, is another good comment from a listener. Another one. Why are you all not giving this queen her props? Hey, I thought we were. What? Anyway.
I think we did.
I think we did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
I got a couple more here. I'm late to this interview, but I'm so ecstatic to luck up on and view this. Thanks for interviewing this legend. Why does this not have more views? It has a lot of views, actually. Thank you, Miss Allison Seeley-Smith. I am the biggest fan of Storm. She was the one who made me fall in love with the X-Men and Storm's character in particular.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Oh, and this person bawling with joy hearing your voice. they just get nicer. This one actually is nice. Storm was the only black superhero on screen when I was growing up, and as a young black person, it meant the world. She meant the world, always and forever.
Ah,
that's awesome.
I thought that one was very sweet.
Yeah,
feel it. feel it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's going to be that for another generation of folks too, you know, carrying on with these characters and keeping on the story. So it's fantastic. Yeah. Very excited to see what's next.
All righty.
Thanks for joining us, Allison.
Thanks, Allison. It was really cool seeing you.
All right. We're going to talk about this fantastic episode now. Cool. Have a good night.
All right. Bye.
All right. So, yeah, Storm stopped by.
did Ryan know you were going to do this?
No.
Oh, that's fine.
Did you ask me my face go?
I did.
We'll freeze frame it.
Yeah, that'll make a little shorter to your face.
Yeah. She's coming to the. It's a little convention called Nickel City here, and Dan, I talked to you about it, and it's there's seven of the voice actors are coming. I can't freaking wait.
Oh yeah. You guys got a lot of nickel there in Buffalo.
No.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Even more interesting. it's just an intriguing mystery.
Where did you get your nickel?
Yeah, where did you get your nickel?
Who did you take the nickel from?
Yeah, they just call it the Nickel City. It's been that's one of the nicknames.
Okay, fair enough. There's no reason. Yeah. It's just a nickel of a city, you know.
Yeah,
that's how you describe it.
Goes back to like old trading days and stuff. Because Buffalo was really big, and like the Industrial Revolution and all that because of all the canals and trade between Canada and then the access through the Great Lakes to all the other states and stuff, but I don't know. I'm sure I learned it at some point, but I don't remember.
Probably get your nickel from Northern Ontario like everyone else.
Most likely. And,
should we get into the episode, fellas? Yeah. Now that Storm has flown away, but it was nice to talk to Storm about this episode.
Oh, she's fantastic.
Isn't she the best?
Pretty great.
All right. Let's go. And that story's hilarious about not waking the baby. It's just like, but I have to be Storm. I have to, I basically have to yell.
It's like, the winds of change are flowing.
It's just not working.
All right. Do you want to get into this? Season 1, Episode 6.
Life, Death, Part 2. Here we
go. Beginning with nothing to do with the life, death storyline. Back into another side story.
It's its own life, death. Because everyone said he was dead, even though we all knew he wasn't dead. I don't know why they were saying. The only nitpick I have on this show is that everyone kept saying Xavier was dead, even though they knew he wasn't.
Well, as far as the action were concerned, he went off to try to get healed, and they couldn't guarantee they could, so maybe they should assume he died.
It's quite the assumption, but I guess he hasn't contacted them, so I guess you would have no reason to think he didn't.
Well, and even Lilandra, when they left, was like, even if we could fix him, he probably will never come back.
She did say that, so yeah. I mean,
she did say that.
Probably. She's an asshole.
Which I guess that's changed, because now he's like, I have to go back.
Yeah, like, well, you're going to fuck up our lives if you do, and he's like, I don't care. It's pretty great. So anyway, we begin with seeing a battle between the Kree, which we haven't seen very much of in the series, and the Shi'ar.
Or any, I don't think.
I believe at one point, we did see the Supreme Intelligence at one point when there was some broadcast going across the universe and showed a bunch of different people witnessing it. One was Doctor Strange, and then one was the Kree Super Intelligence, or the Supreme Intelligence, yeah. So we see Deathbird fly in, smash a hole in the window, and suck out a bunch of the Kree soldiers. But there's a big.
By the way, Deathbird is awesome.
Yeah, she does kick a lot of ass in this, way more than she ever did in the other series. She's only sort of like a lackey for her brother, and that was really it.
And she's just so persnickety. Her dialogue is great. She's.
she was amazing. Absolutely.
I think I have some.
Surrender. No, just perish.
Mm-hmm. So you know what? Hold on, I didn't end our previously on X-Men properly.
Yeah, you did.
Oh. Sugar, I can't feel you.
Okay, let's go.
Too soon.
Now that I killed the mood. Oh man, that kills me every time I watch it. That kills me.
So we see her be confronted by Ronan the Accuser, who we all recognize from comics and from the Guardians movies.
Which and is he's cool got a sweet outfit on.
His outfit is very classic, which is nice.
Yep.
But then as his back is turned behind them, the wall busts out, and we see the rest of the Imperial Guard come in.
And all of a sudden, Ronan's super outclassed because Gladiator's here.
Yes.
It's like they don't even really need an Imperial Guard most of the time.
The other guys don't seem to do as much. Yeah, you know, but we do see the giant guy crushing people whose name I forget. Devin's going to tell me now. Who's the giant guy?
Oh, his name is, I'll think of it.
And the firepower or the electrical power guy or fire guy.
It's something guys. Bland like Titan or something. It's
that is bland.
Well, the fire guy in this one, on Vulcan.
There's the other fire guy. There's a I have him. His hero click. What's his name? Starbolt. Yeah, Starbolt.
That's right. Yeah, that is very generic.
Titan is the giant guy. Nailed it. Thanks, MZ.
So we do see some fun dialogue between Deathbird and Ronan, where she says, like, you get the honor of being, when they make my statue, you'll be the body I'm standing on top of.
C-Jack says Deathbird's clearly a racist.
Oh, she clearly is. Well, about people from our sector of the galaxy, at least.
Mm. Oh, because of our, like, podunk backwater or whatever she calls it. Oh, it's the ghetto. She calls us the ghetto.
The Milky Way ghetto.
Yeah, that's right.
Milky Way ghetto.
I want a t-shirt that says Milky Way ghetto.
Oh, they're already out
look
there.
Look on. Oh, are they? Yeah.
I was going to say, I'm sure the second it became a meme that it.
Probably, yeah. That t-shirt game is.
1,000 shirts coming in. So we do see one of the people. We see Destiny there with the group of the Imperial Guard. We also see Vulcan hanging out in the background, who it looks very much like Vulcan. So that's a nod.
Oh, it's Vulcan.
Probably a future storyline we'll get in which, I guess, Cyclops, the space dad, was fucking around in space and made a new. I don't. What is Vulcan's story in the comic?
He's not Corsair's son. He's the son of Duken and the mom. Yeah.
Oh God. Okay.
Yeah.
It's very it's not good. They'll do something with it probably.
Making him Corsair's son from space makes more sense because he's already in space.
It'd be kind of disappointing if they don't explore that now that we've seen him.
Well
especially because we've met Havoc already, and there's some kind of connection, but they never do anything with it.
Yeah, we do see quite a bit of these Imperial Guard characters here. We see was it Smasher? Star Smasher? What's that guy with the little symbol on his chest? Something Smasher, right? Yeah. Is it just Smasher?
Smasher is the guy with the exospecs.
Yeah, he's there. He's getting. And we see the kind of looking dude, and looks like he's made a rock or something. We also see a guy that looks suspiciously like the Guardians of the Galaxy 3000 character. When the Guardians of the Galaxy were first established before we did the Star-Lord version, and when they were in the future of the Marvel Universe, there was the guy that had fire powers. I can't remember his name. He kind of looks like, he looks more like what's his face? The Galaxus Herald. The fire guy.
Fire Lord?
Fire Lord. Yeah, there's a guy that looks baggy like him in the background, too.
Yeah, that's Starbolt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we see them kind of take out Ronan and all of his people. They really fuck up Ronan.
Yeah, they do.
And we get a little bit of blood. She gets a summon from her sister. From one of the little lackey that's in the thing, and Deathbird has some shitty things to say about her.
Basically. Hey, there's my Starbolt.
But the message from the sister is that they're announcing that the sister is going to be marrying Charles Xavier.
Vulcan. Emperor.
So she mentions that a year ago that the healers attended to Xavier and blah blah blah, and now that he's healed, they're going to get married. Essentially, is kind of what she's announcing. And we do see Charles is alive and well, living amongst the Shi'ar.
Just perish.
Do you have this Lilandra text where she's talking about Charles? And
always
what he did
of utmost priority.
Because they're like, your sister's calling. Always an utmost priority.
Yeah, I love yeah, Death. She, yeah, and no, she puts like her, she puts his any. Heel like in his face too, and there's a little bit of blood that comes out, so it's a nice.
Yeah, I don't think I have any.
She's just announcing that like a year ago they brought Charles here to heal him, and he had saved the galaxy from Deken, you know, and now his greatest feat yet is unlocking her secrets to her heart and how they're getting married and stuff. So it's a nice little moment. We see him come out. He's wearing a fancy helmet. He can walk, and you see that he's alive and well, which is nice. He looks slightly younger than he did the other series. The virtue of a
teacher lies in showing their students how to walk on their own.
True, but only if he is sure there are no more lessons he can teach them.
I like how bird-like some of the Shi'ar are, and so how like it shows like the crowds of all of the different. There's some really different looking aliens kind of.
Well, that's the thing. Some of them have the vestigial wings, like that's why Deathbird has wings, but Lilandra doesn't, because some of them just have the remnant wings.
Mm-hmm. And who are the horse Deathbird. People?
The horse people.
Yeah, there's like various aliens that look like horses. They kind of like the big long snout and the long mane. They seem to be like a subservient race to the. They almost seem like slaves with them. To the Shi'ar.
Yes, it's probably just one of the.
Someone sound off in the comments if you know where the horse people are.
I feel like it's better. It might be better Ray Bill's people, actually, is what I'm thinking. But I don't know what type species he is.
Oh, but you're right, see, Jack. He does do an excellent Xavier. And this is a great Xavier episode.
Yeah, I mean,
you are a hard fellow to please, Andre.
I'm not an 8, Davin is incredibly good. It might be a 9 by the end of it. I'll have to see how much Storm's story hits me harder than I did.
Xavier stuff is really good too.
Okay, so you go off a year. You're gone for a year. You don't check in with your X-Men. You just assume, hopefully everything is going well.
Oh well, Xavier's still a dick, kind of. We know that.
Uh-huh. Twice, yeah. It's...
He's Xavier.
Xavier's a jerk.
Yeah, he's totally a jerk.
Arrest this treacherous vulture.
Oh, jeez.
So basically, we get a little conversation between Xavier and Lilandra talking about the unsureness of the Shi'ar to accept him as a king, you know, amongst them. He mentions that the suit he's wearing allows him to walk. And, you know, so that kind of hides the fact he can't. They mention that once the Kree are crushed and they're kind of set up, and then the wedding can happen, everything can be tickety-boo. And things seem nice. He seems in love, you know, with this alien woman. I'm assuming their genitals match up, and therefore they can have a nice relationship. You know, it's always funny in these alien shows where, like, everyone's physiology seems to line up enough for that to make sense.
Especially like, when, the Shi'ar come from birds.
Yeah, and birds don't really have genitalia, not in the traditional way that mammals do.
I think it's just internal.
It might not be able to use this anyway, so.
I think male birds don't have penises. It's something. It's some other weird thing. So, you know, maybe Xavier needs some kind of an appendage to maybe it's like a strap on. I don't know. Anyway.
All in the mind, Andre.
That's true. Yeah. They could probably just do that. He does have those mind powers. So
they could definitely just do that if they wanted to.
So while they're figuring out what's going on there, we cut back to Earth where we see Storm tending to Forge, who is being overtaken with an infection from the bite from the adversary that happened before. And every time she's
in that mohawk,
and like in the reflection in the glass that he knocks over when she's trying to help him, she sees the adversary. The adversary is kind of like her insecurities given a physical form, you know. Like
in it's the lies in, she it, tells herself,
yeah. It's sitting in the rafters and it's trying to make her feel bad about her romance with him. And
it's pretty creepy. Like, it's just like up there subtly sometimes. Like, this show does horror pretty well.
But this show reminds me of very much, and it's a movie. Maybe I'll suggest it in my movie watching. Yeah. Are we doing that segment? Probably not. Anyway,
yeah,
I'll suggest it. Not. Okay. So there's a movie that very much is like this, where there's a creature. I'll let the viewer see if they can guess it if you're into horror movies. So it's a mother who's having issues, and there's a creature that almost represents her guilt and her pain. And her grief from something tragic that happens to her.
The Babadook?
Yes. So, very much so. So, it reminded me a bit
of I love the Babadook.
It's one of my favorite movies. I think anyone that suffers profound grief in their life should have to watch that movie. because it has a very important message about grief that I don't think any movie has really tackled in a way that that one has, at least given it a the method they use to explore the theme is very unique and I think very effective.
Make sure you're relaxed going in. If you're a little bit tense, then that kid will drive you crazy, though.
Of course it will. It's supposed to.
But it's just like, it's a lot. It's a great movie.
I have a friend who has like a cute little two-year-old, like three-year-old toddler who like is very like doesn't have big tantrums and is very nice. And he's like, and he watched that movie and he's like, I don't know, man, that kid seemed like a bit much. And I'm like, yeah, your kid is two. Wait until your kid is like eight or nine, and then see if you feel the same way. So,
oh yeah, Beta Ray Bills people. That's something.
That's what I said that earlier. I said they're probably Beta Ray Bills people. Yeah. I can't remember what they're called, but
I don't think Beta Ray Bills people look like horses, though. I think it's just him that does because he was given this treatment that made him have superpowers and stuff. So, I agree with Cousin Dave here. That bird would be terrifying in live action. I'd watch it. The adversary would be awesome.
Right. He's of a race called the Corbinites.
Yeah, the
Corbinites. Better Ray Bill is. So
yeah, let's they look like horses.
But he does.
Yeah, because he overwent this like treatment to make gave him superpowers.
Oh, you're right. They don't. They don't have the big bill in front. They're just kind of like smooth. Yeah. Yeah. Weird. Interesting. Why would we make him look like a horse anyway? So
to make him have superpowers.
So horse-like appearance gives you superpowers?
You want to be as strong as a horse? Look like a horse. That's what I say.
We're a big, huge fan of Mr. Ed. Fine.
Huge fan of what, sorry?
Mr. Ed.
Oh, yes. Yes. The horse, of course, of course. And no one would talk to a horse, of course, that is. Unless the horse, of course, the famous Mr. Ed. So anyway.
Bojack Horseman.
Yeah, I like that. No, Bojack Norseman is what they called it.
Oh, that's even better.
Yeah, that's what they said online or something when they were talking about it.
That's pretty great.
So anyway, the thing is trying to help her to feed on her insecurities and make her let him die, let the poison kill him. And you know, she's rebelling against that. Says, look the other way, watch, get used to the fact that like life takes things away. You're not an X-Men, you have no powers. And where did being an X-Men ever get you? She's just playing on her insecurities and like, you know, and then forcing her to like relive being in a box and then being forced to face a demonic Jean Grey, Beast, Wolverine, like all these different monstrous versions of the X-Men, saying that she'd renounced her gifts, you know, she didn't embrace them, and makes her feel, you know.
Look, I got some of that here.
Yeah, play all that. It's good stuff.
Executioner's neutralizer was not the only weapon tamping down my gifts.
Oh, that's way later. That's the end of the episode, dude.
Oh, whoops.
Jesus Christ.
Wrong one.
This is the
wrong
worst one yet.
All right. You continue.
Anyway,
I don't have that.
The adversary is like I'm surprised. The adversary is like really, you know, laying at home, like trying to get her to give up and attacking her. And just
I was a bit short on time.
Clutching her around the neck. The adversary is kind of dispelled by Forge, who is. Gained himself long
enough. Get out of here, demon! Get out of my house! That's all he had to do, really.
Well, he has like a magic book, and he's using magic powers.
Yeah, he looks like Doctor Strange.
It's very much looks like Doctor Strange. I'm sure that's.
Well, yeah, especially with like things around his arm. He was just.
I'm 100% sure
the crimson bands. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So, like, whatever magic Doctor Strange taps into, it's the same sort of thing that Forge is using right now. But he basically sucks the adversary back through a portal, a Doctor Strange type portal. And, you know, they have a nice moment, but he's rather weak from the poison. He says there's a cactus out there that has a rare thing that can fix him, but they need to go get it. And he can show her the way. So we cut back to Xavier hanging out with Lantra of the Shi'ar. Then we see them approached by Deathbird, who... says that he's from the wrong side of the stars. He's Terran. And she obviously has a negative opinion of Terrans.
I mean, so do you.
Who, me? You think I distrust Terrans?
Yeah, kind of.
Well, you're right. I don't think they have a high opinion. Listen, I believe in persons. I don't believe in people.
Yeah, it's fair
enough. I believe in Davin. I believe in Ryan Jablonski. I believe in my friends, my family, people I've met over the years. I don't believe in the human race as a whole. Because there are a lot
more... It's a numbers game. The more you add to a pot, the worse it gets, pretty much.
Maybe someday I'll have enough people, persons that I'll make up of people, and my opinion will change. But for now, I've seen a lot of horrible things with people that make me nut. I think individually people are good. I think as a group, something horrible happens sometimes. And sometimes good things happen too. But I mean, the bad things are seem to make way more of an impact than the good things. There's a good line where Deathbird just basically talks about how Terrans are garbage and they can't do anything to help the race, and she really hates the fact that there's one here.
They still kill each other and stuff.
Do you have this line that Xavier says, which is probably my favorite, where he says, "I appreciate you saying the quiet part loud."
No, I missed that one.
Which is one of my favorite lines
I've heard in this show yet. Well, that line gets said twice in this episode.
That's true. But I just think it's really, like, it doesn't seem like something Xavier would say, but I still really like it.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
But she throws it right back at him, like, four lines later.
Yeah. Yeah, because he says something about being unsure if he wants to stay there and not go back with his X-Men or whatever.
And basically, Deathbird posits that the only way she'll accept Xavier, which is kind of a weird, like, I know it's a show, but it's like the idea that, like, okay, the only way, like, she really hates humans. And she's like, the only way I'll accept them, I guess it makes sense, but it just seems convenient for the plot, is if Xavier will wipe all his memories of Earth.
I think that song's for you, Andre. One bad apple don't spoil the whole bunch, girl. Give me one more chance before
If you put a rotten apple in a barrel of apples,
it does rot them faster.
Yeah, it'll rot them faster. 100%
way faster.
The Osmonds don't know what they're talking about.
What? That Donny Osmond is a prophet.
He's a Mormon.
Oh, God. So he is probably a prophet.
Wait, he's Mormons. Still alive. He's a Mormon. Yeah. So anyway, she wants him to wipe all his memories of his time on Earth, and he's hesitant to do that. So we see Xavier having an introspection to grapple with this idea. We see him looking at giant statue that the Share kind of represents part of their religion. And I love, like the guy, Gladiator tells him about, like, the history of this character and their mythology and what their opinion of life and stuff is. And then Xavier goes, "How very Rudyard Kipling of you." There's no fucking way Gladiator would know that reference.
I think they're like, "Who is this Rudyard?"
He's like, "Who is this Rudyard A. Kipling?"
Younger cultures that, had they not been tilled to death, would now
that's way later too.
Oh, way later. I meant this one.
Forgotten my greatest gift. Hear me. Class is now in session.
That was pretty sweet, though. It's like, we're going back to class. I was like, oh, yeah, this is a great Xavier episode.
That it is good. We do see him get to be Xavier. It's just weird that, like, our first react, like, Xavier was the character we knew as the professor who taught everybody everything, did his thing. And then the first time we get to see him in this show that represents, that's sort of bringing back that X-Men, it's him as a walking space, like, consort who's like, you know, like, he's just, he's very
left off.
I get it, but well, we left off, he's like in a coma, but you know,
we knew that's where it was going though.
Yeah, I dig it. You know why? Because it feels like I'm reading a comic book. You know, one minute Xavier's on Earth doing X-Men things, the next story arc he's in space in a exosuit hanging out with Gladiator talking about Rudyard Kipling. Like, I like that aspect. And in fact, I think this episode will be a 9 for me now, because I talked myself into it a little higher. I do really like it.
D makes a good point. Deathbird tried to get Lilandra killed in the OG show. Why is she still kept around?
That's what I wondered. She teamed up with her brother and tried to help him take over the universe with the stone.
Yeah. And then she was working with Apocalypse at the end of season 4.
I guess all's forgiven if you're related.
So, yeah, well, I guess that has to be it. I'm sorry, sister. You know how we are sometimes. We fight, but we don't mean it.
It's fine.
Sure, I tried to wipe out the entire galaxy and make it enslave it to me, but yeah.
But I was never going to hurt you.
So Lilandra kind of overhears Xavier struggling with this decision, and she, you know, she tells him she loves him, and you know, he's still struggling with giving up his memories of Earth. Yeah, maybe so. Maybe the Kree War smoothed things over, made uneasy bedfellows with them.
Yeah, and MZ says intergalactic war supersedes sibling rivalry.
So we get back to the horses, which I so love from the last episode we had in the desert. That was sarcasm. So we get them going into this part of the desert where they're going to look for the cactus. There's they're going into
horse aliens. Andre's like, oh wow, look at those horse aliens. But you give him a real horse, he's like, ah, horses.
I like horses. Jeez. They're scary, but I like them.
You don't want to be kicked by them.
Anyone who doesn't distrust horses, it's not smart.
Well, you can, are you untrustworthy to the horse? Like if they, Devin, if they don't trust you, know you.
That, well, here's a fun fact for you. Do you know that more people are killed annually by donkeys than by airplane crashes?
Oh, donkeys are ornery, man.
That's horses what they're for. Are just you, bigger donkeys. Yeah. So we see them wander into a cave where they're going to find this mysterious cactus, and it's full of stuff left over from the Civil War and other things. You know, Forge gives a bit of a history lesson about colonists, which he obviously says in a tone that is befitting of what they were and how they treated his people. You know, they talk about how his people were exterminated by them and stuff. And then, anyway, they talk about sort of their budding relationship, about her issues, and there's all this love stuff, which is, you know, very, very nice. Cut back.
They're a nice couple.
I do like this couple, actually. I like it better than Archon, that's for sure.
Like, they're both, like, mature adults, which is I don't like, teenagers being romantic is the most boring thing ever, but, like, you know, these are mature adults that have seen some shit. You know, they're finding each other.
I hope they bring Archon back and it becomes a love triangle.
And he fights Forge to the death for the love of Storm. You know what? It's the only way I want to see Archon again.
He just murders he just murders Forge in cold blood.
What? No, I don't want to. I want to see Forge win. Surely he can beat Archon. He has technology for specifically beating Archons. If he wants it.
I really do dig Deathbird in this series. She was barely a character in the old one, but she really gets lots of time to shine in this episode. And she calls him a descendant of simians, and he's inferior genetics, and she doesn't want it mixing with their superior DNA.
Okay, now she's starting to sound a little racist.
Yes, she's very racist.
Yeah,
but I mean, you know, and I'm not defending her because obviously. But there's different things at play here. Like, it's weird. Like, to me, racism amongst us is interesting because we're all from the same thing. Whatever made us made whatever person of the same skin color that's slightly different, right? Like, we're all from planet Earth. We can all agree we're all from this same thing. But she's from a highly advanced society from another galaxy. And she's like this backwater planet that can't stop fighting itself. You know, like, is wanting to inject itself. And then, like, I get where she's coming from, but no, very, very racist vibes, which is interesting. Because, like, space racism is a funny way to approach that concept. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Xavier eventually decides he's not going to wipe his memories, which causes a fight between the Imperial Guard, which are... hello? Oh, sorry. All right. Oh, Davin must have muted himself. For some reason, the sound just went off in my ear.
I did, yeah.
That's okay, no worries. So I just thought maybe you guys could hear me. So the Imperial Guard come to his defense while Deathbird and her legions, you know, and there's a big fight between them all, which that's guns cool. are pulled. It's a pretty nice little fight. Is that old guy supposed to be Lilandra's father?
No, that's Mentor.
Oh, right. Sorry, I forgot about him. He's in the other series, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So during the fight, Xavier says he forgot his greatest gift, which is basically being a teacher, and he uses his powers to put the ball in the astral plane in a classroom where he's there at the front wearing his classic suit.
It looks amazing. I love the visuals.
I'm very cool to see him in the green suit with the blue and tie and everything.
Yeah,
he's even got the apple and the globe. Yeah, this is a 9. This is a 9.
It's so good. It's so good.
I talked myself into it being a 9. I think I was slightly distracted when I watched it the first time. I watched it again, and I liked it better earlier. Now just skimming through it, I'm like, yeah, it's pretty good. I think it's a better episode than the previous one, the previous Storm one. But it's mostly for the Storm stuff's good too. I just feel like it's sort of, damn
it. We'll see like when we get to the ratings.
Davin, an 8 or a 9 is still good, dude. It's still really good. 10 is 100%. 90%
I've been 10s across the board so far. But you know what? I could also rank those.
You're
10s.
Blinded by the nostalgia, my friend. And I am.
It's that good.
I am 90% blinded by it. So it's just enough for a little to come through.
Well, I look at it this way. I gave probably, I don't know, less than 10 episodes of the original series a 10. Probably more like
we gave like 3 or 4.
Yeah, not many. And every episode of this show so far has been as good as those episodes. So they're 10s. If I'm judging it against the old series, these are 10s across the board.
So I forgot to mention before we cut back to Xavier's story, Forge delivered the unfortunate news that the way to get to the cactus is to crawl through a tiny space, which, you know, we know that Storm has issues with claustrophobia. So she basically has to crawl through this thing. She's got a light in her mouth.
It's a little bit of a fake out, though. It's funny because she already has to like enter this cave. And you're like, oh, that is kind of a tight cave. And then she looks over at the actual tiny hole and she's like, oh, no, that's the actual cave.
It's like the ventilation system in Die Hard, like she's crawling around.
Yeah.
So she comes across, basically, like, it takes a long time to get to this, but I can sum it up pretty quickly.
Yep.
The adversary appears, you know, is making her feel horrible about herself, trying to make her give up on her pursuit, and she realizes that it wasn't even just, you play the dialogue, this is it, that's the time. This is it, this is your time, your chance.
It's my time to shine, baby. All right.
You dare interrupt my glorious moment? God.
This is my glorious moment, fellas. Please don't interrupt.
We won't.
All right. All right, thanks.
Press our button.
Executioner's neutralizer was not the only weapon tamping down my gifts. There was that lie, and I believed it.
Exactly, so...
And I already played it, but... All right, keep going.
No, it's all right. So she realizes that, you know, she was insecure about herself, her powers, and whatever, and that she did mention she had a desire to see what being normal was like, and I was playing at her as well in the previous episode. Go ahead.
And this is a... I feel like this is a direct comment on some of the criticisms of the old series, where it's just like, because they would have to save Storm a lot. Like Beast would catch her from falling, or they would save her from her claustrophobia. And it's just like, I mean, that's what they're like, commenting on here. They're just like, you let others save you a lot when you didn't need to do that, is what the adversary tells her. It's like, you let people save you. You're a goddess. Like, what are you doing?
Yes.
Like, you're right. And she's like, no, yes. I'm not the adversaries. I'm not right. No, listen to what.
But then they do like an episode one where she like fucking opens up the sky and kills like 1,000 sentinels at once. Like,
well, she's still Storm.
Yeah, but it's just convenient to have her be like.
This show has been such an upgrade for her as a character, though. I mean, and obviously taking over like, you know, more of a leadership role. But just, I mean, and this goes to, you know, back to Bo and some of the other writers. I mean, she's just being written how she always should have been written. Yes, and you 100%. Actually said earlier when you were talking to, you mentioned it to Allison, like, it, since it's more of like, I don't want to say it's an adult show, but it's not a kid's show. No. So like,
it's an adult show. It's PG-14.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So like, and you get to see Storm the way Storm should be.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, exactly. So she suddenly realizes she's been holding back and that, you know what, the Forge's machine, it's assumed that Forge's way to try to heal her, in fact, may have, and that her healing...
I was wondering that. Like,
It's not overtly said. It may have, but maybe she had a mental block as well, which is holding her back. So she suddenly breaks that, destroys the adversary with lightning, smashes out the side of the mesa that she was trapped
in. Oh, I got this. I already played it when Allison showed up, but...
Let them thunder, for I am lightning.
It's the most glorious thing ever. I was cheering and crying. Oh my god!
So apparently, getting fully realizing your powers makes you form a new costume out of thin air, which happens, in which she now gets the costume from the 80s, the black costume with the tiara, which is really cool. And
no, that's an awesome callback. She still has her costume power. She used those in the very first episode of the original series.
It also apparently makes your hair grow back because she now has a full head of hair instead of a mohawk. So
she's even upgraded her costume power. She's amazing.
It even works on hair now.
Yeah.
We see her like be totally free and fly amongst like the, and fly in and start flying around the horses and flying through the caves and like just being totally free and accepting her powers and forth there, which is a beautiful, lovely moment. And then we see her using her using the cactus she got to heal Forge. And we see him say maybe they should go to a beach somewhere. And like, you know, it sounds like it's a cheeky, like, let's go get a margarita on a beach somewhere south, you know, like go to a resort or something. And she says, that's a nice idea. Implying that like their relationship's going to continue. Forge is really sexy in this. He's all like not wearing a shirt for most of it. He's got these little cut off jean shorts, little mustache. Do you guys find it funny? Maybe it's just me, but like when they do the intro, and I forgot to mention some of the additional intro scenes of the show when it started. We now have Nightcrawler instead of Gambit in the intro, and Magneto's not there anymore. And a few of those other things. And but when it shows Forge's, because Forge didn't have like a massive part in the show before. He was like in the future a lot with Bishop.
Wait, was Forge in the opening credits?
Yeah, it's the same one they showed him before where it was like, it's Polaris holding.
And just in a scene.
Yeah, but it's just so funny like because he's such. it is like that. It's not a tag like that.
No, it's not like that.
But it just shows the scene, and then like it's like Forge is way in the background kind of watching, and then it just sort of like shows the scene and then goes, like right into his face, and he's just like, so watch it again. It's kind of weird. It's a very strange way to do it. It kind of makes him look like a background character that just sort of gets featured out of nowhere. But anyway, so while they're
talking, Xavier Ghetto School Deathbird.
So while they're talking about going on vacation and you know, celebrating their newfound relationship and her powers and the fact that he's healed, they turn on the TV and then set. Go ahead, Dev.
How about this from Serenity Q26 though? It's just mutant magic, but if you want a science reasons, the electricity stimulated her hair follicle growth, and that was a huge bolt of lightning. Ta! Cannon. Done.
Just pulling that out of your ass doesn't make it scientifically accurate. I would be curious to see her science degree or whatever.
Serenity Q26 is clearly an environmental scientist, and how dare you question
it? So if I get struck with lightning, I'll suddenly regrow my hair back? That'd be fantastic. I hope so.
I'm running outside.
Yeah, if you can take the strike.
I'm wearing like a...
Are you tough enough, Andre?
Tinfoil helmet and running out into a lightning storm.
Then you can get a new wrestling gimmick like Lightning Man or something. You know.
I'll just get this. I'll be Samson. I'll get the long flowing hair.
Like, wow, look at old school. Where did he get that hair? I come back
next week and I get like Fabio hair. I got struck by lightning. Yeah. You too can have a full head of hair if you follow my new system. Being dangerous during a lightning storm.
You pretend to be your like twin that didn't lose their hair, like the Michael Murdoch in Daredevil.
Like, no, right, yeah, because that worked well.
I'm Andrew Myatt.
I love how this show has introduced this idea that Xavier says demerits whenever someone says something out of turn. He's never done that in the old show. Not once.
But they also didn't reference the old days much in the old show, like when they were younger. They didn't really talk about it much.
Yeah, fair enough. But anyway, so we get back to it. So just as they're talking about going on this nice vacation, they turn on the TV and they see the news report about what happened in Genosha, and they're shocked and horrified. Cut back to Xavier, who, okay, Serenity QT6. Q6.
That's pretty funny. There's plenty of nurses in the world, so it's like, whatever.
I feel like there's probably an awful lot of folks that think they're X-Men. I'm not saying you're not. I'm not trying to diminish your knowledge of X-Men at all. I'm just saying,
all the X-Goons are X-Men.
I feel like there's an awful lot of people in the world that are certain that's of X-Men experts as well.
Yeah, and most of them are probably right.
Yeah, probably. I mean, you read the books and you love the you know, the comics, and you watch all the movies and the shows, and you love it so much you immerse yourself in it, you're going to be an expert.
And then you eventually find yourself here at X-Rated, the X-Men animated
version. That's right, where you belonged, your family, your home.
The family you never knew you wanted.
Looks like Ryan's in school as well. He's taking notes over there.
Now he's keeping score. Who's winning?
No, I got notes, man. I got pages. Terrible.
Oh, sweet.
So I'm winning is what you say. All right.
So, you know, Deathbird speaks out of turn. Xavier puts an apple in her mouth. We're back on the astral plane where Xavier's giving them all a lesson about power. This scene reminds me very much of another of my favorite movies. Davin, let's see if you can guess this one. Disney movie about a young boy who is destined to become a king, learning about leadership and power.
The Lion King?
No. Close, though. By the same company.
You sure?
But a young boy learning about all the different ways different animal races and different peoples rule, whether by strength, whether by knowledge, whether by compassion, whether by fear. Ryan, you know this one? I'll give you another hint. It's based on a famous book by T.H. White. One that is
Sword
featured...
in the Stone?
Yes, The Sword in the Stone by Disney. T.H. White, The Once and Future King, is a book that is it was based on, which was referenced in the X-Men 2 movie rather frequently. It's a good book. But anyway, Xavier gives them all a lesson on the Shi'ar Empire being the way it is propped up on the fact that it has crushed and subjugated other races beneath it to allow them to succeed. Essentially building a nation on the backs of other people.
Oh, I got that. I got that stuff. Yeah. That's good stuff.
I have forgotten my greatest gift.
We already played.
Hear me. Class is now in session.
Session.
What is this?
What have you done?
Gladiator, please raise your hand if you have a question.
He loves flaunting his powers, though, Xavier, and he loves it.
Younger cultures that, had they not been tilled to death, would now be empires rivaling your own. Fearing this, you strike at the knees and claim you can help them walk again.
This is great Xavier stuff. I was talking to Cousin Dave. He thinks it's speaking on American imperialism. To me, it rings a little more like a British imperialism thing, but it's the same thing. It's still imperialism.
The Shi'ar Empire is a snake oil racket.
Even you Terrans claim might is right.
The rhyme that sells the lie.
The rhyme that sells the lie. How many of those exist?
I mean, American imperialism is just an extension of British imperialism. I mean, where did America come? Where did we all come from? Where did Canada come from? So, you know, it's just the more extreme British people that wanted to do their own British empire and made America, and that's extended. But, you know, I think it's imperialism. I think it can be, it could stand in for almost all of it. You know, the British, the Germans, like, you know, us, even with our indigenous people and some of the shit we've done. Mm-hmm. Like, Canadians aren't innocent either.
Nope.
But it's very interesting. So he walks them all through the history of their race and how, you know, they've subjugated other people in order to prop up their own. And essentially he's pretty close to like making to finishing his point, making everything okay, when he suddenly gets a psychic vision of like mass murder and genocide, and seeing, and he sees Gambit as a scavenger.
No, they were drinking wine, making love! Oh, my children of the Atom, destroyed! No!
Ah! See, you're not tested as an Xavier voice actor until you have to go, no! Because that's what he like does most of the time in the original series. And this guy did it very well. No! Yeah, it's very good.
So he says he has to go back to Earth, and they're like, you've almost convinced them, like, if we leave now, it could undo all of this. And he's like, I don't care, I have to go back. And he blames himself, saying that all this happened, drinking wine, making love. Yeah, it's very nice. So, you know, it's like, is that what you thought they were doing for you? Like, you must remember that Earth was a problematic place. It's the same place that made Sentinels to kill your people. And you're like, I'm sure in the next year they've sorted that out and everything's okay. He doesn't even check in. Like, he's just living his beautiful little, like, eat, pray, love life, finding him that Xavier got his groove back on Shi'ar World. Like, I just find it hard to believe about that. That annoyed me a little bit.
Since then, the world government that now exists in Xavier's mind has passed a free wine for all, allegedly.
Free wine and making love for all.
Well, I don't think you can guarantee the making love part, but the free wine doesn't hurt.
Well, the free wine helps with the making love part.
It absolutely does.
Yeah, absolutely. So, anyway... So we get, he says he's got to go back, and he doesn't care. Like he's so realizes something horrible has happened on Earth and needs to return. So that's the end of his story. We get the credits and then a very brief cut to seeing one Bolivar Trask, who is suddenly not in custody anymore as he was at the end of episode one, running away from some entity that is following
him. Did they arrest Trask in one? No, that was Garrick. That was Garrick.
No, they arrested Trask. Yeah. They had the big fight in the desert where they fucked up all the Sentinels.
Oh, right. Yeah, right. Because
the UN came and took him.
Yeah, they did.
Well, he got away.
How did he get away? It's never explained. Well, they'll explain in the next episode. Well,
they will. Because he's running. He just clearly just escaped from something. Someone's chasing.
No, he didn't. Something else happened. So,
well, all that could have been in his head, too, because it looked like it was all like a weird, dilapidated town and stuff like that.
It could be. He's running down a dilapidated street. He falls down in front of a theater where he's shot in the back by a red beam. He falls in front of a diner. He said, I gave you access to my machines. I did what you told me to. Let me see what his exact dialogue is. He says, I did what you asked. I gave you my DNA so you could access Master Mold. And then he's shot in the back by a beam. He's kind of crying. He says, the guy that's chasing him says, you did what you had. You don't be afraid. You have nothing to fear as long as you place your trust in Sinister. We see that Sinister is, in fact, the mastermind behind the Genosha Mastercut. And it's funny because we should have figured this out, because it was said several times in interviews that Mr. Sinister was the main villain of the season. Yeah. So we should have known that it would have been him behind everything. And we already seen him earlier. So this is all.
I'm not convinced he'll be the main villain of the three parts.
You still think it's going to be Cassandra Nova?
No. I don't think they'll reuse her since she's going to be in the movie. She looks awesome in that trailer, by the way.
The new one, yeah.
Yeah, she looks so cool in that. I'm looking forward to that. I just don't know. It doesn't have to be Sinister in the three-parter. He's already the biggest villain because he just murdered Genosha. So, like, they can carry that on to the next season. He doesn't have to do anything else. That can be it for this season. And he's still the main villain.
It's like, and they took the idea of the mutant massacre and they killed, like thousands of mutants as opposed to just the Morlocks. It's insane to me. In the first season, being X-97,
I wouldn't be very disappointed if they use time travel to undo this. I really am. I think
that's what they'll do.
I think finding a way to make Magneto survive with time travel chicanery would make sense. But if they bring back Gambit and they undo a bunch of that, I'm not going to be happy.
I have a theory about Gambit that we'll talk about during X points.
You're going to make a back set of Horsemen of the Apocalypse. You mentioned this before.
I might use it as an X point anyway and get into more detail.
I don't like it.
What are demons but reflections of our fears and shame? Until we finally heal our adversary by embracing it.
This, as rumors swirl, that Genosha is the opening salvo in the long-feared evolutionary war.
Like, what a buzzkill, Storm. She finds love, she gets her powers back, turns on the TV, it's just like, everybody's dead! And she's like, oh, no.
So in that scene, did you notice Forge's face? Like, you know, Storm looks super upset, obviously. Forge looked pissed off.
Yeah, because he's kind of had a negative opinion of people, he's indigenous, so he's seen the horrible things that people have done to his people. He's also a mutant, so he's seen the horrible things people have done to his people. So he's almost not surprised that they would do this shit because they've done it
right,
before.
Right.
They even mentioned earlier about colonizers like wiping out his people. So it was kind of like he's like, of course they would do this because they're fucking monsters.
Don't be surprised if he recognizes some of his own technology at work, like with the control collars. Like, he worked for the government for a while and kept inventing things for them, and they've been misusing it since, and that's why he does not work for them anymore. He never should have trusted them, but MZ's thinking Sinister's still third in command behind Apocalypse and maybe Bastion. I mean, they're not teasing Bastion for no reason. He's just in a picture with Forge randomly. We got to see Bastion.
And apparently he was seen in the background of Genosha, so maybe that's what somebody said. I don't remember. Yeah. I never saw it, but it could very well could be right. So he could have been checking things out before the massacre. Although, they'd have to do a lot of work to establish a new villain, you know, to be like, it was this one. You know, like, because usually if you're going to do something to the level they've done this, where it's so big and the stakes are so high, they'd have to, like, it'd have to mean something or be connected to something that came before to just suddenly throw in a new villain and be like, oh, yeah, it's Jim. Jim over here, this guy I never saw before. It's just weird.
Well, I might have an X point for that, too. So maybe maybe we should move on.
Each of the is left to look into his own heart.
But first, we must decide. We must decide right now.
I'm flip-flopping, so you guys go ahead.
It's a 10. It was amazing.
Davin, you're going to give 10 to every episode of the show.
If they're this good. For me, the weakest link was the Motendo one, kind of. And I love that nostalgia. Exactly. But it was because it was still like a 10 on like pure nostalgia, and the Storm stuff was good. But it's, to me, it was the weakest complete episode.
Which I gave an 8, I think, right?
And after that, I'd probably say the Nathan one where they send him into the future. But even that's amazingly,
it's a great
emotionally
episode.
Impactful. It is. Those are the weaker ones. So like, that's how great this series is. I could have given number 5 a 20. Oh. I could probably give this one a 20 or a 15 too. I love this episode. But, yeah.
I'm a 9 on this one.
All right.
I'm a 9 too.
You guys are cold-hearted bastards. But no, I'm just kidding.
Well, you know, it's
90%.
I'm a little biased because as much as I love X-Men, I have a hard time getting through some of the cosmic stuff sometimes. I mean, just in general.
I love the cosmic stuff, which is probably what elevated this for me.
Yeah, me too. I really want to see a version of Rise and Fall of the Shi'ar Empire, especially now that we've seen Vulcan. He just flips on all this and tries to take over the Shi'ar Empire. You know?
Well, we got to establish him more. It'd be weird if they just did it out of nowhere.
Well, I think this is going to be like a slow play. Because I'm going to figure at this point, we already know we're getting at least 3 seasons, right?
Oh my God, MZ says, are you talking to me, MZ? Did I give Fire Made Flesh a non-10? Did I give it a 9? Interesting. Interesting. Well, I might have. I thought I gave them all 10, so I'll have to go back and check that out. But, yeah. Dave says, rank the 10s. I will if I give them all 10s, but apparently I already gave one a 9, maybe? Now I'm confused. I don't know who I am.
What does it all mean?
What does it all mean? I mean, like I say, it was the weakest one to me. Motendo won on nostalgia, I guess. All right.
Motendo was the weakest, but it's still fucking great. It's still an 8. You know, 8. It's the difference between your favorite album from your...
with your 8s. All right.
Between your favorite album from your favorite band and your second favorite album from your favorite band. They're still both fantastic. Just one slightly higher than the other because something about it touches you in a different way.
Mm. What way did it touch you, Andre?
It did. 8 is really good, brother. It's very good.
All right, let's get into some X points. I'll go first since I've been teasing mine. Well, I mean, it's the one I already talked about, I guess. Which was, what was it again?
Gambit, Death.
Gambit, right. So when Xavier sees Gambit, he sees him like as a skeleton, which is odd. So it's, but to me,
he's
that's
dead.
That's yes, but like
it's the only way that
the imagery. The imagery makes to me that's suggesting he's the horse will come back as the horseman Death.
Well, and to me, like, doesn't that just kind of prove that Magneto's still alive?
I never thought Magneto was dead because we didn't see
him. No, I didn't either. But, like, you know, it's obviously, like, you know, that they're leading to all these people. But there's no way that in that moment Charles would see just Gambit and not Magneto, who is, like...
Well, he didn't see Moira. He didn't see, Banshee. He didn't see other people he had relationships with that are dead either.
Well, right, but that's what I'm saying. Is like, but Magneto's the closest person to Charles and probably next to Lilandra at this point. So, like, there's no way he would have seen Gambit over Eric.
Or Moira.
But yeah, exactly. Well,
I mean,
exactly.
She did die. Like, that's another thing. That's why I think there's this, like, apocalypse angle. There's a reason he saw Gambit. And Magneto,
Gambit's one of his X-Men, I think, is what it is.
Well, yeah. I mean, it could be as simple as that. But, you know. What about Banshee?
He was an X-Men, awesome. But...
Great imagery of a giant skeleton Gambit. So, like, I'm not picking anything like that. That was a badass. So.
To me, it's the Horseman War angle, but we'll see. We'll see.
All right. Curious. I'll be curious to see it. I don't know. I want to see real stakes, and I want to see them continue. And I think this is the best way to do it.
Well, having, like, that'll be impactful in its own way, like having them have to fight off against the Four Horsemen of Apocalypse, and one of them is actually their friend for once. That hasn't happened yet in this show. It's always just been random Morlocks that were the Horsemen, and Archangel, but they didn't really give a shit about him at the time.
Well, it would explain some of the mutants that they killed off in Genosha, too, that you did.
Banshee is another. Banshee's been a Horseman of Apocalypse. Banshee's? He could come back as one.
Or shit, what if they turn Madeline into one?
Did Madeline die?
Yeah.
She was dead in the... We talked about this last week. She was one of the dead people. She was the first one to die. After Cable said that, I'm sorry, Mom, and went back to the future, the Sentinel's beam hit her right there. And then when they showed all the bodies, lined up, she was one of them.
I suspect Sinister will reclaim his work. It's like a property thing.
I think he got what he wanted, which is Cable.
Yeah.
He doesn't, though. They sent the baby to the future.
Well, we don't know. We don't know the plan. We got episodes to go, buddy. It's not done
yet. We do. We do. All right. What's your X point, Andre?
My X point. When Bolivar Trask was being chased by Mr. Sinister at the end of the episode, a shot hits him in the back and he falls in front of a movie theater marquee. You know what the movie that was on the marquee was? War of the Worlds. Which is a subtle reference to a giant mechanical thing destroying a city and wandering through, the same as what happened to Genosha. So I thought that was a nice little nod to that.
Very good. Can you get an X point for us, Ryan?
Oh, of course.
You were taking copious notes.
Copious notes. It's ridiculous. Good word use, Devin.
SAT. But I thought it was kind of cool, the costume, the armor that Xavier was wearing on, you know, especially when he first came out, was the same cover that he's wearing on the cover of Uncanny 275, which is that badass, like, Jim Lee wraparound cover.
I'm going to grab it. Just keep going.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Of course, Devin adds it just handy.
Oh, of course. It's I don't know. Like, I love that they, you know, back in the 92 time and then still in the 97, they're not afraid to lean right into those comics. And it looks exactly like it. Like, they didn't even change it.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Big goofy Jack Kirby-esque, like, headwear and stuff. And
I even loved in the intro where they showed, because they added to the intro at the beginning, a scene with Charles and Lalandra touching hands, and then, like, her helmet comes off and she still has that weird bug helmet she had on in the old series, which is really cool. Like, the love of the original series and the source material just bleeds through every moment of this show.
Oh, absolutely. Every scene. There it is.
Oh, no, don't rip your comic. That looks old. Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. Like, I remember, like, first buying that comic. I'm like, who's that? Like, dude in the stupid helmet, and then I'm like, oh, okay.
Well, no, it's funny.
Look, my favorite Double Dragon game's on the inside cover.
No, number 3.
Love Double Dragon 3. So good.
Issue 274 was actually my very first issue of X-Men ever when I was a kid.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. That's the one with Magneto and Savage Land Rogue and Nick Fury on it.
Yep. It's, that's a classic.
So, that was it. That was the beginning of my X-Men comics.
Jeez, I don't even know what my first one was anymore. God. I wonder if it was X-Men number 1. I must have bought comics before X-Men number 1. But who knows? All right, back to me. Is it? Did you do a second one there, Andre, while I was gone? Or you guys were just
chit-chatting? No, you did one, okay. And then he did. You did one, I did one, and Ryan did one. Fuck you.
All right, so Bastion. All right, so Bastion. The last three episodes in the season are called Tolerance is Extinction. They have mentioned that before. Gyrick says that very sentence in, like, one of the previous episodes. But the big Bastion storyline in the comics is called Zero Tolerance. So I don't think that's a coincidence either. I think this is going to be a Bastion three-parter. And I think that's who Cable was talking about. I don't think he was saying Mr. Sinister's coming, even though the Sentinel came. Like, I don't even think he's talking about that necessarily. Like, I think he's talking about Bastion coming for this three-parter. He wasn't even talking about this killer.
Bastion's in the future too, isn't he?
Yeah.
Is it beyond Cable's future?
He's like a Sentinel. He's like a, He's like a sentinel dude. Actually, I think MZ might have commented on the comics.
You know, you might be onto something because...
Serenity did. Proto-Nimrod. Yeah, he's a proto-Nimrod.
You might be onto that because in the intro to this episode, they do show Nimrod. They show him inside the Master Mold. Right, they show him inside the Master Mold thing, and they show him... They show him inside... Was that in the original series? I don't remember Nimrod being inside a Master Mold. So maybe it's not something coming in.
No, Master Mold's... Yeah.
So in the series, you see Master Mold, and you see Nimrod standing in his chest in the opening hole. So in the intro to this season. And you see a clip of him in that future story where Wolverine and Storm are fighting. So they might be reminding us who Nimrod is. So when their revelation is that Bastion's connected to Nimrod, it means something.
Mm-hmm.
So you might be onto something.
I think they am.
Well, and they can connect it all with the Friends of Humanity, too. So it's not even like it's necessary from left field or anything. It's just
different characters. And it's something
Bastion could be in charge of the Friends of Humanity.
Well, as I say, you put him at top, so he's automatically super bad. But like, you don't need any more explanation. Like,
it's something we've seen before. So,
and Executioner's just his goon. Like, Executioner's his number one kind of like enforcer.
Well, and so is Gyrick, right? Like he's you know, Gyrick's working for him, and Trask.
Gyrick probably doesn't know who he's working for, but who knows?
No, he has no idea.
All right, back to you, Andre. To Ryan now, is it?
No, it's me. A small goof I noticed, and maybe you guys noticed this too. So at one point when Forge tells Storm there is a cacti out there that I need, and cacti is plural, and it's only one cactus that he uses, so it should be there's a cactus out there that I need. That was interesting. It's oddly worded the way he said it, unless there's a bunch more cacti in that hole that we needed.
There had to have been. There's no such thing as a colony of one. But
we only saw the one.
It's true, we did. But she didn't climb too far into that cave because it was a scary cave. You got another one for us, Ryan?
Yeah. So actually, this is kind of cool. I found a lot... Not that there's a lot of complaints about these, you know, episodes, but one of the ones that I've heard was complaining about trying to figure out the timeline of how long Storm and Forge are together. Because they go from like meeting in a bar to like being in love.
Yeah. And then they're bang. And
it seems like it's been a little while.
It had. So what they did is actually there was a deleted scene. They got cut out of this would have been out of episode 4, so got cut out of Life Death Part 1 that shows, and it was maybe like 15 seconds long, Storm in basically her bedroom at Forge's place with all like these food trays of just uneaten food laying all over the place, kind of showing like this big like gap of time that she's been there for a long time. And then it leads to like, you know, when she actually goes downstairs and eats dinner with him being like a big deal, because to try to show that like she's actually been with him for a very long time, but just kind of like in her own head, like doing nothing, but they cut it out because it wasn't like super important, and it just, you know, sometimes, you know, cuts need to be made.
Interesting.
Random tidbit.
Go back to me, is it? Okay. Well, Welsers and ex-goons. Let's talk about Vulcan. Like, They got to do Rise and Fall of the Shi'ar Empire now. Like, is this all we're going to see of the Shi'ar Empire? Like, showing Vulcan seems to be very intentional because he's not, like, a standard member of the Imperial Guard or anything. That's a really strange addition if they're not going to branch off on that. And I hope they do because that's a really fun storyline.
Yeah, it wasn't an accident.
No. All right, Andre, back to you.
Well, no. I have something here. What was it? Xavier's whole thing about imperialism and, you know, power. And I just love it. It kind of brought it back to the X-Men 2 whole discussion about the different types of ruling, the Magneto versus the Xavier, the might makes right, or the trying to find a way to quantify with everybody. It's a nice little way to kind of bridge those two worlds. That was nice.
And it's his nice line, too, I didn't clip, too, where he's just like, look, the truth is coexistence is messy.
Yeah. And also, apparently this was like the first episode to have animation serviced by a different animation company.
Really?
That's something I read. Tiger Animation did this one. Okay, aka MOI great. Animation instead of Studio MIR, which still did the intro sequence, but apparently this is a different studio. Yeah, it looks great.
Oh, Serenity says, we know from episode 5 that it's been a month because they say Nathan was born a month ago. Okay, so it's been at least a month.
Right, that's what Lon Scott said. They're having conversations. That's right.
And then the amount of time for Maddie to take off and get a job on Genosha. So, you know, quite a while. A couple months, maybe even.
Yeah, that's my guess. The actual timeline of the show itself has been going for, it seems so fast, but like, yeah, I mean, there's definitely months at this point.
Feels like we haven't seen much Beast in a while. Gotta get some Beast happening. That's right. So to you, your last one there, Ryan.
Oh, so maybe did you guys notice at the very beginning of the episode when the camera first starts going into the sky above like the Shi'ar, there's something in the top left. And I couldn't tell if it was like Eternity or if it was a Watcher sighting again.
Wow, but I did not notice.
Yeah, it's
in what scene?
It's right literally at the very beginning of the episode
when before
it starts going down on like the Kree ship, it shows the sky, like this the space, but in like the top left of the screen, there's like a shape of like a body. And like,
oh, it's got to be. It wasn't the Watcher again, was it?
See, I don't think so because. Yeah. I was thinking it's got to be like Eternity or something. Like, yeah. I've watched it 3 times now, and I can't figure it out. We were just talking about, nothing is done on accident in this show. No. So like, it's not like they just accidentally made a body-looking thing in space.
Interesting. I gotta check that out. All right. Well, my last X point is this. We already talked about it, but I'm gonna bring it up again because it also has me speculating. Who else do you think we're gonna see in tag form by the end of these seasons? Like, who else is gonna join the main opening intro roster? It's awesome seeing Nightcrawler on there. Sunspot. Yeah, he might. He should, I suppose. He'll have to join the team right
now. By the end of the series, he's gonna go fully black Sunspot.
Yeah, he's gonna do that for sure.
Do you think we'll see Cable?
Again? Cable would be cool if he joined the series, but I mean we got
Bishop. Oh, Cable on there, interesting. Because he's never really an X-Man. He does his own thing with X-Force and whatnot.
What? It'd be cool if the show established X-Force. It'd be pretty
awesome. That would be fun.
Man, why can't the show do spinoffs? Why can't we get an X-Force or X-Factor cartoon?
Oh, that'd be fucking awesome. Who says we can't? Who says
X-Factor cartoon would be so cool. We got Forge and the rest of them in an X-Factor cartoon.
Strong guy. We're already talking about having a movie.
Well, look, if Cable's sort of a hit in this show and the Deadpool movie's a huge hit, they might just go, let's make a Cable Deadpool.
The last two Deadpool movies were huge hits.
They were pretty big hits. This third one is going to be a huge hit.
They were massive hits, obviously. They wouldn't have done a third if they weren't.
True, but I bet you this one makes 5 times as much money.
Listen, studios, I just talked with a friend today. There was a time period where studios were happy if a movie made $10 million. If they said the budget of a movie was, we'll make a small movie for $10 million. If it makes $40 million, you made $30 million, we're happy. Studios aren't happy unless their movies make over $100 to $200 million or $1 billion now in profit.
Mm-hmm.
So if movies make that much, they get sequels. If they don't, like the David Fincher Girl with the Dragon Tattoo movie, that movie made like $100 million, but it wasn't enough for them to be happy with its profits. So they never made any sequels. They still made $100 million, but they wanted to make $500 million, so they didn't bother.
Mm-hmm.
That's the decision studios make now.
MZ, I would love to see Forge join the team with Storm. That would be awesome.
It'd be fun.
Hey, Andrew. Andrew Cassini says, hey, everybody.
Hey, buddy.
All right. Well.
Yeah, buddy.
That's our X point, so let's move on to everybody's favorite segment, at least Andre's.
Mm-hmm. You don't mind the segment? Movie, change the channel. Yep.
All right, well,
Babadook is coming.
I already told you the movie that you should watch. And honestly, if you're trying to pick a movie that is relevant to what's going on in this episode, I think the Babadook is the movie you should watch. It's a fantastic movie. It is a deep meditation on grief. If you ever experienced the loss of a loved one in your life, someone you're very close to, that movie will accurately explain the feelings you go through, and also properly contextualize the way to deal with grief. And the truth is that you can never get rid of it. You just have to learn to live with it. And it's a fantastic movie. I highly suggest it. But the movie I'm going to suggest, when I was in Cuba recently, there's only a few channels that spoke English in the hotel room. I was in the hotel room very often. At nighttime, when I was trying to go to bed, I'd watch TV. So several
you didn't pass out by the pool? It wasn't much a vacation.
Oh, no, I was hammered, but I would just come back to my hotel room at like 2 in the morning and watch TV. My wife would be asleep, and I'd turn the TV on and watch whatever was on. So there's 22 channels that were in English. One was a movie channel, and one was CNN. So I often just watch the movie channel, and I watch like Noah, the Darren
Aronofsky. Wise choice. On.
Other ones as well. But there's a movie from the 80s I'd never seen before. And it's a buddy cop movie that I was aware of, but just had never watched. And I watched about half of it before I fell asleep. And it was super fun. I ended up ordering the Blu-ray just because I wanted to finish watching the movie. But it is 19... What year is this movie?
Is it Tango and Cash?
1989's Tango and Cash.
Yeah, I want to roll with guessing movies.
Kurt Russell. Good job. So I always avoid this movie because it looks like a cheesy, stupid movie. And it is. But
everything in the 80s is, though, and that's what makes it glorious. But
it's very fun.
Yes.
They take two rival cops that are both doing a really good job at fucking over the mafia. The mafia, one of them is like a super by-the-book, straight-laced, wears glasses, and a suit guy. The other guy's a hard-edged rebel that's kind of a smart-ass. They cast the straight-edged guy as Sylvester Stallone, and the hard-ass is Kurt Russell going against type for either of them, which is really fun. And, you know, they get framed for crime, and they have to team up to clear their names and stop the bad guys. And but from what I've seen, it's ridiculously fun. Like it's I laughed and enjoyed it immensely. It wasn't just because I was drunk. It was a fun movie. So yeah, go watch that.
Show up but on a future hold up.
Watch the Babadook. But yeah, watch Tango and Cash.
All right. All right. Let's get one more segment into us before we get out of here.
All right.
Here we go.
Hey, check this out.
Check this out, everybody. This is our comic recommendations and reminiscences. Well, you know what? We were already talking about it. Go read Uncanny X-Men 275 with the fold-out Jim Lee cup.
Ah, oh, classic.
Classic. And reminisce about Double Dragon 3. Yeah, pretty great. Oh, and Turtles the Arcade Game.
And do yourself a favor, go watch the movie Double Dragon from 1990.
No, don't. Just watch the hold up episode.
Did you guys have that on hold up? Okay, I thought you did. Yeah. I was going to say, I'm pretty sure you did.
No, we did. That's quite this. That movie's quite something. You know what? I didn't dig out the issues, but I can. Well, the other fellas here make the recommendations, but go. David Cutler talked about it before, but go read Life Death, Parts 1 and Part 2.
It's pretty great.
Yeah, that's my recommendation. What about you, Andre?
Oh, comic recommendation. I haven't actually. I just finished that Jimmy Olsen one, so it's a long book. So I don't really have anything I've read just recently. I'm trying to think of something I've. Morrison's X-Men. Go read it. Go read it again. Keep reading the whole thing. Read past the Eve for Extinction storyline. Read the Nuff Said story. Read it right to the end. It's so good. It's fantastic. It's the best X-Men comic ever written.
No. When I get to catch up on Cassandra Nova too, so you're
exactly
yeah. It's a good way to catch up on Cassandra for sure. Go read the Nuff Said one for sure because that's the Cassandra Nova.
She's way uglier in the comics.
I read quite a few of the Nuff Said's that came out that month, and it was the best one.
The Spider-Man one I like too.
Yeah,
those are the two best ones.
The one where the Spider-Man fights. Yeah. Well, there's a couple different Spider-Man because there's a couple Spider-Man titles at the time, but there was one episode. I think it was. I don't remember what Spider-Man books were at the time. There's Amazing, and then there was Spectacular.
Spectacular was going to.
Yeah, so the one where he fights the mimes. That was the Nuff Said on that book. I don't think it was Amazing. I think it was the other one. No. But it was pretty great.
I like the Wolverine one, too, because he's just in the Arctic, and he gets jumped by Wendigo, and it's just Wolverine fighting Wendigo. And the Elektra one was sort of the same thing, which was just her fighting Silver Samurai silently.
Right. And I have some fun side notes to let the people know about when we're done the segment.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah, go ahead.
Hold on.
Okay.
All I got is Uncanny 220, 225, 225.
Oh, you know what? Oh my God, Ryan. That issue you just showed me, that was my first X-Men comic. That is the first X-Men comic. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. That's awesome. I still have it, and it's in terrible shape because it was my first X-Men comic.
So this here is the Uncanny Issues of Fall of the Mutants. So if you actually want to see Storm get her powers back,
good recommendation.
In the comics, which I know you guys know, like she was powerless for like 3-4 years.
Yeah, there's a ton of time between Life, Death, Part
One. And here it's like, you know, it's Forge's machine actually works, and hey, Storm's back. Mm-hmm. But it's right before the like the Outback era and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, I love the Outback era too. But yeah, that was my first one. I can't believe that. What a coincidence that was.
Yeah, that's
couldn't
crazy.
Quite place it, but yeah, it's that one. And I bought it because it looked so cool, like Blob there and everybody. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, it showed a lot of cool characters. Yeah, so, right. Well.
That's my check this out.
Well.
Good choice.
Good choice indeed. Let's land this Blackbird.
All I need now is for you to contact your students, Professor.
Serenity, I think we all had the Pizza Hut kids meal X-Men.
Oh, I remember those Jim Lee ones for sure. my uncle had all of them, and I was really jealous because I think I missed one or two of them.
You could get a big poster, too, and I got hold of that poster.
Your homework is to watch the next series episode, which drops tomorrow, lucky us, which will be Bright Eyes, which is a obviously a reference to they have released a clip about it, which is Rogue going nuts on a bunch of...
But that title's not about her. That's going to be about like Cable or something.
I think it's about her. She's used the word. If you remember the show, she's called people Bright Eyes in a colloquial way.
Specifically, she said to Cable a couple times, but it's definitely a Rogue.
So maybe it'll be a Cable Rogue episode or something. Mm-hmm. But it definitely is related to. She has said Bright Eyes several times in the past.
Interesting.
It's also the title of, and this is me going. You know, I like to go down rabbit holes. So, and speaking of rabbit holes, it is the name of a song very famous by Art Garfunkel, which was on the soundtrack to the movie Watership Down. And if you remember that film from the 70s, the animated film about the fragility of life, featuring rabbits getting murdered horribly throughout the movie as an animated show for children, it was a very traumatic movie, but also one that had a real important message about life. So perhaps it may play into it as well, but I think it's more about Rogue sort of using that term to describe Cable in the past. Two fun notes. I just wanted to put X-Men knowledge that came to my attention recently. The Marvel versus Capcom 2 arcade edition has an X-Men 97 version of the arcade cabinet you can buy off Amazon that has the art from the series on it, which is pretty cool. It's very nice. It's about $500 on Amazon.com. That's American pricing for Canadians. And it's $160 shipping to Canada, so you're looking probably close to $800-$900 for it, but it's pretty cool.
You're a fool not to buy it at that.
The other note I wanted to mention was in the past, before the series had begun, we had watched some of the X-Men movies, and a little note came into my attention about Wolverine Origins, which introduced Kevin Duran's character as the Blob, and apparently... They had planned in The Wolverine, the sequel to that movie in which Wolverine goes to Japan, to feature a scene showing the Blob as a sumo wrestler in Japan that got scrapped. So
that would have been funny.
That could have been after that been there for that never happened. So it would have been
training. He was training in a ring.
He becomes a big super. Well, he's boxing, but he becomes a big.
Yeah, but still,
a famous sumo wrestler in Japan, and Wolverine's there, which would have been a little nod to the. I mean, I can see why they want to distance themselves from X-Men Origins, but. You know, it would have been fun to see that.
Oh, that would be great.
He's also featured in a new horror movie that just came out that's supposed to be really good called Abigail.
If you want to hear the best version of Blob there's ever been, check out the edited version of our Bob Skier screenplay radio theater I hope to have out ready for once the 97 is ending. So hopefully we'll have the edited version of that out there, and that'll be tight, and everyone should go back and check that out, because Stephen Waters' Blob is amazing in that. I'm not even
joking about that at all. He does an amazing
job. He's probably the best part of that series. And I'm in it, so you know.
It's he's an incredible voice actor.
Yeah, he's very, very good.
And my Wolverine, not bad.
That was terrible.
Bob Skier was real happy with it. So
I think my one was better.
Well, your Magneto is very good.
Thanks. That was fun.
Yeah. It was fun. All right, well, fellas, you can support the show if you so choose, like wonderful Ryan here. You know, support the show. Meet Storm. You know, there's all kinds of benefits to being an ex-goon. Get flies out of my storm, exactly. But you can find us at patreon.com/X-Men Review Show. You can get sweet merch. We'll get some new designs up there soon, won't we, Andre? At redbubble.com/people/X-Men Review Show/shop. Yeah, well, you know, the Magneto is right stuff's pretty hot. We're getting some sales on that.
He was.
Was he?
Yeah.
I think definitely.
Well, maybe.
Probably Xavier's.
This whole Genosha thing is sort of looking like it. But we'll see how Xavier cleans up the mess when he gets back. He's coming home. You can contact us at xmenreviewshow@gmail.com. Follow us at YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch. Find our audio-only version wherever you get your podcasts. And please like, review, subscribe, and on YouTube, hit the bell. You know, hit the bell button.
Bell?
Yeah, that's what the YouTube people say. They say hit the bell.
Do they?
Yeah.
I'm out of the loop.
Because that alerts you to when our episodes drop. If you hit the bell. And, of course, we are a proud member of the United Federation of Podcasts. I'm going to skip the rundown tonight, fellas. We're getting a little long in the tooth here.
Actually, we're not. This is probably one of the shorter episodes you ever had.
I know.
But it's fun. But it's
started
fun.
Late. but yeah. Any final thoughts from either of you?
There's only 4 episodes left, and it's already breaking my heart.
That there's only that few left?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
More.
It already hurts. I thought about that yesterday, and I was like, yeah.
Well, you know, guys, it's better to have loved and lost than to have never loved at all.
But talk about proof that weekly shows work so much better.
Oh, yeah. I agree. I wouldn't have wanted to binge it.
But just to never give up hope. Like, if you had told me that I would get to see another season of Twin Peaks, to see another season of X-Men cartoon. Yeah. I mean, I'm very hopeful the success of this will create a Spider-Man 98. You know, well,
so
I hope so.
We'll have
too,
to cover that if they do.
Well, we have to do the full of the series before it.
Oh God, we have a lot of stuff to do here. Look, we need a network. You can support the show if you want to have us to have more shows.
If everybody wants to spread the word as much as possible, so that this is our job, and we can just do this, we can do a lot more of it for sure. So.
Oh, you know what I say? I'm going to skip the rundown, but you should at least tell us.
All right.
Cousin Dave says he'll be in for Spider-Man. We'll have him. And check out his shows on our network, Live Long Podcast, Super Mater Brothers. All right.
Episode just dropped with Becky Kinsey, who is a Canadian from Toronto, or Ontario rather, a horror comic indie person who does amazing work.
Good episode.
Yesterday. Very fun talk. Next week, I have my talk with Andrew Thomas, who is an illustrator and letterer for many, many comics. And I don't have any more recorded after that one, so I'm working on getting some more in between. I had a couple people reschedule one stuff, which pushed things back. But if things go according to plan, my next episode will be with Jen Rossman, who is an artist, a writer. So
I had a busy week. I'll get you a couple guests this week.
Well, we have Jen, and then hopefully after that, I have finally my talk with Sarah.
Because there's a few in the pipe there, that you got to wait for certain dates for.
Keith Krichow, Sarah Meyer will be down the pipeline, hopefully. And I believe I have somebody coming up, Jim. Right, I want to be talking to Jim Calafiore.
Jim Calafiore?
Yeah. Nice. Who'll be on the episode for that. So.
Oh, yeah.
I'm reading his new book right now. He sent it to me, and it's really good.
Awesome.
Ned
is a super nice guy, too.
Oh, yeah? Cool. Good.
Awesome.
Looking forward to talking with him.
All right.
Yeah,
well,
so, yeah, go review that, like it, subscribe it. I would love to have enough followers to monetize it just because it would make it feel like I really dig it. It's great. I'll keep doing it only if I have 10 people listen to it. But it'd be nice to get to the next level. So pimp it, push it, submit it. Love it.
Get that bell.
The best tag team in the comics podcast world. That's right here.
Ryan Jablonski, do you listen to my other podcast?
I do.
Put him on the spot.
No, I have. You guys, every time you keep talking about it, I was like, oh, hell yeah.
He's like, I have to. You guys won't shut up about it.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's good. Right. Once in a while, I have to listen to at least one podcast that isn't just X-Men. So.
No, you don't need to bother. It's the best.
All right. Well, well said. Let's get out of here, fellas. Catch you next time.
All right.
I will save you and let you live your tempting daydream.